So we're taking up in March the 17th, 1914, and this is volume 11. The text says one who does the divine will. It really means one who lives in the divine will, takes part not only in the external works of God, they're called ad extra on the outside, but also in the interior actions ad intra of the divine persons. This is a totally amazing message. Okay. Because this shows you the privilege beyond anything you can imagine. So Louisa said, continuing in my usual state, my beloved Jesus kept making himself seen inside my whole being. Now that's Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. Luke 17:21. And in such a way that I possessed all of his members. Now notice the word possession. This is total union. And very often the total union is expressed in my beloved is mine and I am his. Okay. So he looked so content that appearing unable to contain his contentment, he told me, my daughter, one who does, that is, lives my will, number one, takes part in the actions ad intra of the divine persons. That means you participate in what the Blessed Trinity are doing with each other in heaven. Only for one who does my will is this privilege reserved, to take part not only in all of our works ad extra, that means creation, redemption and so on, but to pass from these to the works ad intra, utterly private, intimate works of God. So this is why it's hard for me not to content the one who lives in my will. Because since this soul is in my will, that's the reason why you take part, you see, because you're already there, you're inside. Now, so this is presuming someone living in the divine will 24/7, 365. You know what I mean? Not someone popping in every now and then. Because since this soul is in my will, she is present in the intimate place of our heart, of our desires, of our affections, and of our thoughts. Her heartbeat, her breath, and ours are one. That's absolutely amazing. That's utterly amazing. So I want to give you Jeremiah 23:18 there. Jeremiah 23:18 and Job 15:8. So that's Jeremiah 23:18 and Job 15:8. Therefore, the contentment, the delights, the glory, the love that she gives to us, all of them are infinite in their way and infinite in their nature, and in no way dissimilar to ours. It's absolutely incredible. They are such and they are so many that just as in our eternal love, one enraptures the other, one forms the contentment of the other, to the point that many times, unable to contain this love and these contentments, there should be an S there, we go out with works ad extra. So the contentment and the love and the unity and peace and everything else that's within the three divine persons is such that it bubbles out in activity on the outside. So that would be your creation, your redemption and sanctification and so on. So we go out with works ad extra. In the same way, we remain enraptured and delighted by this soul who does our will. So the soul has entered into this and the Blessed Trinity delights in us. Therefore, how could we render discontent one who makes us so content? How not to love just as we love ourselves? So I want to give you John 15:9. John 15:9, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. So we're loved in the divine mode. So how can we not love, how not to love just as we love ourselves, not as we love other creatures, one who loves us with our same love? In other words, we're loving God in the divine mode. That is, if we're living the union of the divine will constantly, where everything is on the divine mode. There are no curtains of secrets between this soul and us. That's why you constantly see Jesus taking Louisa outside of the body and into some part of the universe or into heaven, and she sees what's going on in heaven, and she also sees what's going on the earth. Okay. So there's a traditional terminology for this, and that is that you're taken into the inner courts of the Lord. There's a very famous text in Jeremiah. I think it's around chapter 25, where Jeremiah is trying to show up a false prophet called Hananiah. And he says something very interesting, not only of Hananiah, but previously he says it of other prophets as well. Have you been in the council of God? In other words, have you been in these inner courts? Now, the term inner court or council, of course, has to do with the structure of the temple in Jerusalem, where there's an outer court for everybody, and then there's an inner court for the priests, the men of Israel, and the holy place for the priests, and then the Holy of Holies. Now, that's also the symbol of the stages of entering into union with God. And so if you're in the holy place, and definitely if you're in the Holy of Holies, then nothing is kept from you. And you can see this is going on between Jesus and Louisa all the time. And it gets more so as we go on in the volumes. So there are no curtains. Now, why does he say curtains? Again, that's a reference to the temple, because there was this huge curtain separating the Holy of Holies from the holy place. And nobody could go past this curtain except the high priest. And therefore, only the high priest once a year could go into the actual presence of God. And so the significance of the death of Jesus tearing that curtain in two pieces meant that God is present to everyone. The Old Testament is finished when everybody is walled away from the presence of God. The presence of God is here. It's absolutely for everybody. So to go beyond the curtain is another expression of entering into intimacy with God. So there are no curtains of secrets between this soul and us. There's no ours and yours, but everything is in common. Okay. And watch this. What we are by nature, impeccable, holy, we render the soul by grace. Now, I want to give you 1 John 3:2. It's probably 2-5. That is, a soul living in union with God doesn't sin. Okay. I want to give you Revelation 21:27. Anyone who sins is outside of what God sets up. And Hebrews 12:14. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. So the sign that a person is entering or has arrived in union with God is that there will be holiness. There will be no sin. Is that okay? And that's what you mean by impeccable and holy. Remember, Jesus was able to say, "Can any of you convict me of sin?" They couldn't. What we are by nature, which is absolutely amazing, impeccable and holy, we render the soul by grace. Now, elsewhere in these writings, Jesus will say that is what happened to his mother at the very instant of her conception, that what they were by nature, they made her by grace. And that's why she could conceive and bring forth the Son of God. So that no disparity may exist between her and us. Now, her is the soul. And just as, unable to contain our love, we go out with words, works ad extra, in the same way, unable to contain the love of one who does our will, we let her out of ourselves and we point her out to the peoples as our favourite one. That's what the Lord has done in all these writings. It's perfectly clear that Louisa was the chosen one, the favourite one. Okay. So our beloved, that's my beloved is mine and I am his. That's the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 16. And also I want to give you Romans 1, 7. And 1 John 4, 11. Now, the reason why I give you all these scriptures is to let you know that these writings are prepared for in scripture. They resonate with scripture all over the place. The scriptures are being quoted or alluded to all over the place. So, and we let her out of ourselves and we point her out to the peoples as our favorite one, our beloved. And that it is only for her and for souls similar to her, that's you and me, that we let goods descend upon the earth. Look at that. Isn't that absolutely incredible? And that only for love of these souls do we preserve the earth. Now, he says that many, many times in these writings. And then we enclose her within ourselves to enjoy her. Now, that's the experience of ecstasy in prayer. Because just as we, the divine persons, are inseparable, so does the soul who does our will, that means lives in the divine will, become inseparable from us. So I want to give you Galatians 2:20 there. Galatians 2:20. I no longer live, Christ lives in me. So March the 19th, 1914. The soul who diffuses herself in the divine will forms the jewel and the joy of the three divine persons. Notice jewel, something very precious. It seems the blessed Jesus wants to speak about his most holy will. I was diffusing myself in the whole of his interior, in his thoughts, his desires, his affections, his will, in his love, in everything. And Jesus, with infinite sweetness, told me, "Oh, if you knew the contentment that one who does my will gives to me, your heart would break with joy. See, as you were diffusing yourself in my thoughts, my desires, etc., you formed the enjoyment of my thoughts, and my desires fusing in yours played together with them." Now notice, we fuse in him, he fuses in us. Look at this. You in me and I in you. It's two people who are doing it, you and me and I and you. When we receive Jesus in the Holy Eucharist, it's called communion. Yeah. He receives us, we receive him. Or if you want to put it the other way around, we receive him and he receives us. Is that okay? And it's both. It's not just one. We're inclined to think of it totally as a one-sided thing. So your affections united to your will and to your love, running and flying into my affections, into my will and love, kissed one another and poured like a rapid stream into the immense sea of the Eternal One. Now, notice the imagery that is used to try and describe God. Here he's described as an immense sea. Now, as we go on into the higher volumes, you're going to hear Louisa saying, "I am in an immense sea," or "I'm in this incredible expanse," and she tries to describe it. And the only image she can think of is an ocean that you looks at as if it's never going to end. The immense sea of the Eternal One. They amuse themselves with the divine persons, first with the Father, then with me, and also with the Holy Spirit. Then, wanting to give no time to one another, we all play with her, that's the soul, and the three of us together, and we make of her our jewel. Now notice, we make of her, of ourselves we are nothing. We make of her. That's like saying somebody who knows how to handle jewellery can pick up something that in your hand or mine may not be all that precious, and they can make something absolutely extraordinary of it. The example I like giving, if there's women around, is if we let a woman into this kitchen with almost nothing, she can make an absolutely gorgeous meal. But if you asked me to do the same thing, I'd say I didn't have the ingredients. But if she's skilled, she can do that. You can give bits of nothings to a person who is an artist, and they can make the most beautiful things out of them. So this is what we're being told. Of ourselves, we're nothing, but God can make something beautiful for us. That's why I think I love that expression that Mother Teresa used to use, that we make something beautiful for God. You know. So we make her our jewel. And this jewel is so dear to us because they made it. And since it must form our enjoyment, we don't use the word amusement, it doesn't come across right to us, we keep it jealously ad intra in the intimate part of our will. Now, that's like saying, I have managed to make this most incredible jewel. I am not going to let the whole world see it because it'll be stolen, it'll be interfered with, and I put it away somewhere safe. And he says the safe place is in the Holy of Holies. You see, that's the Blessed Trinity. It's the Holy of Holies. And therefore, because of this, you're going to hear Jesus talking about her having to live high up. That means in a very high place spiritually. And the high up is a reference also to eagles who fly very high. Hence, I talked to you about the eagle being the symbol of someone living in the divine will. So we keep it jealously ad intra in the intimate part of our will. And when souls embitter us and offend us, in order to be cheered, we take out our jewel and we enjoy ourselves together. Okay. So March 21st, 1914. This is about the irresistible need of Jesus to make known to the soul how he loves her and all the gifts with which he keeps filling her. Now, notice the irresistible need. Love has this irresistible need to manifest itself. I mean, you have to tell the other person, I love you, don't you? It's as much a necessity on your part as it is on theirs. So Jesus continues, my daughter, I love one who does my will so much. Now, you see, let's stop here for a second. He's going to say he has a very special love for someone who lives in the divine will. But of course, God loves everybody infinitely. And he loves us eternally. Okay, Jeremiah 31:3, I have loved you with an everlasting love and I'm constant in my affection. So he's talking about a predilection for someone who chooses to be close to him. So I love the one who loves my will so much that I cannot manifest to her everything or everything all at once, how much I love her, the grace with which I keep enriching her, the beauty with which I keep embellishing her, and all the goods with which I keep filling her. In other words, we can only take it sip by sip. We can only take it a little at a time. If I manifested everything to her altogether, the soul would die of joy. Her heart would burst in such a way that she could no longer live on the earth. But in a flash, she would take flight towards heaven. Now, if he gave Louisa the slightest inkling of how to do that, she'd be off before the end of the sentence. But the reason why the scriptures tell us you cannot see God and live is this. You wouldn't stay, you know. I've often said to people, when it comes to your time, would you even look back? Don't think so. So, however, he said, I feel an irresistible need to make myself known as well as the love that I have for her. Now, you're hearing this. This is the language of marriage, the language of union of two persons, the irresistible need to make yourself known to the other person and to manifest your love to the other person. It's too hard to love, to do good without making oneself known. I feel my heart as though crack and unable to resist so much love, I keep manifesting to her little by little. The little by little is very important because we can't take everything on board. How I love her and all the gifts with which I keep filling her. And when the soul feels filled to the brim, now that is Ephesians chapter 3, verses 19 to 21. And when the soul feels filled to the brim, to the point of no longer being able to contain them, in one of these manifestations of mine, she will disappear from the earth and will emerge and within the bosom of the Eternal One. So that is a little prophecy, a foretelling of how Louisa will die. Because Louisa has been asking the Lord for years, you know, take me, take me, take me. I only want to go to you. But she didn't die until 1947. And the priest who was directing her gave her an obedience not to die. Do you remember that? And it went on for years. And the Lord, Louisa said, I'm the only one that doesn't have permission to go to God. Do you know what I mean? And he said, don't worry, I have my ways to get around that. And this is how he did it. And she slipped away during the night. And for 3 days, they didn't even know whether she was dead or alive, because they were so used to seeing her in ecstasy, you know. So he says, I have my ways and means, don't mind them. I think it's fascinating. So she gets a tiny little preview here. So Louisa said, Jesus, my life, it seems to me that you exaggerate a little bit. Imagine telling God he exaggerates. In manifesting to me where a soul who does your will can reach. No, it can't be as good as this, do you know what I mean? And Jesus, sympathizing with my ignorance, smilingly told me, no, my beloved, I do not exaggerate. One who exaggerates seems to want to deceive. You see, and deception belongs to the enemy. And your Jesus knows not how to deceive you. On the contrary, what I've told you is nothing. Isn't that incredible? And you will receive more surprises, and we'll get them as we go along in the volumes. Once the prison of your body is broken and you are swimming inside of my bosom, the point that my will made you reach will be openly revealed to you. So in other words, Louisa is not being told how far she has gone, because you couldn't cope with it anyway. Isn't it wonderful? And so in the same way, I presume you're making progress in the divine will, but he's not going to let you know. Do you know why? We'd sit back and we'd take a break. And he wants us to go forward, and he wants us to use all the time. So March the 24th, 1914, we're getting very close to World War One, aren't we? It's September, isn't it? The humanity of Jesus has its limits, while his will is eternal and without limits. The soul who lives in the divine will makes up for the humanity of Jesus and is used by him as his humanity. This is very important. Continuing in my usual state, I was lamenting to Jesus, for he had not yet come. And he, on coming, told me, my daughter, my will hides my very humanity within itself. Now, as we go forward in the volumes, Louisa is going to come up against this, that the more she goes into the divine will, the less she can see Jesus. And she says, now, you've gone again. You know what I mean? The only thing I've left is your will. He said, you don't understand that when the sun shines and all its brilliance, you can't see the stars, but they're there. It's just that the brilliance of the sun eclipses the stars. And he says, the brilliance of the divine will eclipses my humanity. Is that okay? My daughter, my will hides my very humanity within itself. And this is why, in speaking to you about my will, sometimes I hide my humanity from you, and you feel surrounded with light. Now, that's 1 Timothy 6:16. God lives in unapproachable light. 1 Timothy 6:16. You feel surrounded with light. You hear my voice, but you cannot see me. Now, that's 1 Peter 1, verses 8 to 9. You don't see him, but you love him. And you're filled so gloriously in a way you couldn't even believe. That's 1 Peter 1. So you hear my voice, but you don't see me. Because My will, that's the light, absorbs my humanity. That's Psalm 104, verse 2. Psalm 104, verse 2. You are wrapped in a robe of light. So my will absorbs my humanity within itself, since my humanity has its limits, the limits being the limits of the flesh, while my will is eternal and without limits. In fact, when my humanity was on the earth, it did not cover all places, all times and all circumstances because of the limitations of the flesh. And where it could not reach, my endless will made up for it and did reach. Okay, that's Psalm 139. Lord, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your face? If I go to the heavens, you are there. Okay. So my endless will made up for it, and it did reach. So when I find souls who live completely, now the little word you need to ring is completely. That's 24, 7, 3, 6, 5. And it says completely of my will. We would say completely out of my will. We're living out of him. They make up for my humanity, for the times, for the places, for the circumstances, and even for the sufferings. Because you're living in the divine will, it's only the divine will that can accomplish this. So I want to give you John 14:12. My disciples will do the same works as I did when I go to the Father. Because since my will lives in them, I use them just as I used my humanity. What was my humanity if not the organ of my will? Such are those who do my will. So I want to give you Galatians 6:17. Philippians 3:10. And Colossians 1:24. Okay, so April the 5th, 1914. Everything that is done in the divine will becomes light. And that is because God is light and we're transformed into God. If we have to live on the inside of the Blessed Trinity, we've got to be transformed into light because God is light. So again, I want to give you 1 John 1:5, God is light. And 1 Timothy 6:16, he lives in unapproachable light. So this is a very important message. Continuing my usual state, my adorable Jesus made himself seen within an immensity of light. Now that immensity of light is 1 Timothy 6:16. I was swimming in this light, and so I could feel it flow in my ears, in my eyes, in my mouth, in everything. Now notice she says swimming, and I could feel it in my ears and everything. So notice the image is still a sea. Do you see that? It's the image is still an ocean. And Jesus told me, my daughter, for one who does my will, if she works, her work becomes light. If she speaks, if she thinks, if she desires, if she walks, her words, her thoughts, her desires, and her steps are all turned to light. So I want you to give you a little heading for this paragraph, this extremely important paragraph, transformation. Transformation into light. So everything is turned into light. But light that is drawn from my Son, S-U-N, capital letter, that means the light comes from God. It's not earthly. My will draws one who does my volition with such strength as to make her spin continuously around this light. Notice the movement. Yes. Later on, he's going to explain. Later on means higher volumes. He will explain that the sign of life is movement. You know, when all movement stops, including the movement of the breathing, they're gone. Okay. So they spin continuously around this life, and as she spins, she takes more light, which keeps her as though captured within me. Now, I want you to notice that the imagery is that of planets going around the sun and taking the light of the sun and taking the energy of the sun. So he keeps on using imagery that we can see, that we can sort of grasp somehow, to tell us something which is difficult for us to take on simply because it's so spiritual. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So he wants everything in us to be transformed into light. So the next one is April the 10th, 1914. And here Jesus gives a meaning to the tearing off of the crowns of thorns from his head. And the second point that is going to be made is the center of Jesus on earth is the soul in the divine will. Okay, so the first one then. This morning my beloved Jesus came as crucified and shared his pains with me. He drew me so much to himself into the sea of his passion. Now notice the imagery again, the sea. That means something immense and great, into the sea of his passion. And I could almost follow it step by step. But who can say all that I could understand? There were so many things that I don't know where to begin. I'll only say that in seeing the crown of thorns being torn off of Jesus, since the thorns were keeping the blood from coming off, pouring out of him, as the crown of thorns was torn off, the blood poured outside through all of these little holes, flowing over his face, his hair, it must have been unbelievable, in large rivulets and descending over the his whole person. So Jesus is going to explain that. You see, nothing happened in the passion that God didn't permit. And if God permitted it, there was a meaning, there was a redemptive meaning to the thing. And it's terribly important when we look at things in our lives, particularly difficult things, to find out what was the redemptive meaning of that, because anything he permits has a redemptive meaning. Daughter, Jesus said, these thorns would which prick my head will prick the pride, the conceit, and the most hidden wounds of man. Now, instead of wounds, you could write sins, so as to make the pus which they contain come out. So what is he doing? He's making reparation for all our sins of thought, intellect, memory and will. Okay. And the thorns dipped in my blood will heal him. Him is humanity. And will return to him the crown which sin had taken away. Now, he's therefore talking about the fall of Adam. Okay, humanity fell in Adam and lost this crown. Now, the crown is that the intellect, memory and will, the three powers of the soul are wounded. So if you want to write that down, the three powers of the soul were wounded. And so what he's doing is using the crown of thorns to restore the three powers of the soul. So watch this then. Then Jesus made me pass to other steps of the passion, but I felt my heart being pierced in seeing him suffer so much. And he, almost cheer me, began to speak about his holy will again. Now watch this. This is a very important passage. I can't emphasize it enough. My daughter, Jesus said, my center on earth, where do you live? Okay, where do you operate from? Is the soul who does my will. Isn't that fantastic? Mm-hmm. That's his address. See, the sun spreads its light everywhere on the earth, but it keeps its own center. In heaven, I am the life of each of the blessed. But I still have my center, my throne, at the Blessed Trinity. In the same way, I am everywhere on earth, that's Psalm 139. But my center, that means my throne, do you see that? The line before said, my center, my throne, do you see that? So if he says now, everywhere on earth, my center, he means my throne. from where I reign, okay? The place in which I raise my throne in order to reign, my charisms, my satisfactions, my triumphs, my very palpitating heart, the whole of myself is found in the soul who lives in my most holy will, as though in its own center. Isn't that an incredible thing? His address. This soul, as we would say, the air code. Nobody heard that one. This soul is so identified with me that she becomes inseparable from me. Now, throughout these writings, when I say throughout, I mean up to volume 36. Jesus continuously refers to his mother as my inseparable mother, which tells you she had this relationship that he's describing. When you get up to volume 11, Louisa begins to be called my inseparable Louisa. She'll be called that later on. And the whole purpose of revealing this is that you and I will become my inseparable, whatever your name is. Okay? Now, you don't become inseparable until the divine union is complete. It's total. It's irrevocable. There'll be no turning back. It's only at that point that you become inseparable with him. So this soul is so identified with me that she becomes inseparable from me, and all my wisdom and power cannot find the means to detach her in the slightest. Now, this is going to be important in higher volumes. I'm up in volume 16 with another group. And Louisa goes through difficult trials. And Jesus said, the bond can't be broken. It's sealed eternally. It can't be broken. And it's the most incredible thing. If you're sealed eternally, then your destiny is heaven, and that's it. It's the most amazing thing. So he says that if we get to the point where the bond is inseparable, then that's it. You're sealed for heaven. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thought?
Pretty good.
Then he added, love has its anxieties, its desires, its ardours and its restlessness. Because when you love anybody on earth, it automatically produces anxiety about the person. You're hoping they won't become ill, nothing will happen to them and blah, blah, blah. It has its anxieties and desires. But my will instead is perpetual rest. Philippians 4:7. That's the peace that passes all understanding and guards the heart and the mind in Christ Jesus. It's perpetual rest. You can also put Psalm 62 there, where the psalmist says to himself three times, rest in God, my soul. And you know why, Jesus said, why is it perpetual rest? Because love contains the beginning, the means, and the end of a work. Therefore, anxieties and restlessness arise in order to reach the end. And much of what is human and imperfect mixes with them. And if my will and love, now that love should have a capital L because it's divine love. If my will and love are not united together at each step. Now, I've told you many times that divine will and divine love are the summary of the 36 volumes. If you're not growing in one, you're not growing in the other. So if my will and love are not united together in each step, poor love, how dishonored it remains, even in the greatest and holiest works. Isn't that incredible? On the other hand, my will operates in a simple act. Now, the very, sorry for using the same word, simplest explanation is uncomplicated. God isn't complicated. We're the ones who are complicated. My will operates in a simple act. He said one fiat for creation. Isn't that correct? And as the soul leaves the whole attitude of the work in my will, and while my will operates, the soul rests. Now, that's the bit that you've read. You desire it, I'll do it. Okay, so our intentions are terribly important, that you want to do something in the divine will. And so when the soul rests, that's Psalm 131. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. Therefore, since it is not the soul that operates, that does the work, but it is my will in her that does it, there are no anxieties or restlessness, and her works are free from any imperfection. But it also can give you the feeling that you're not doing anything. Do you know what I mean? I'm saying these prayers, I'm making these offerings, but what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? People outside of you will say you're doing nothing as well, but never mind, they'd say that anyway. So let's come to May the 18th, 1914. Peaceful souls are the staffs of God.
May 18, 1914.
We must have missed out.
It's a very important one. Yours is June 29, is it? Yeah, you've missed out one then. Okay, so just listen to it. Because this is a very important message. It says, peaceful souls are the staff of God. Now, I've told you many times that words that are used in these writings are used in exactly the same way the scripture uses them. Okay. Now, when you talk about the staff of God, you have to remember Moses. He was told, staff in hand, you go out and you work all the miracles. Is that okay? So the staff represented Moses leaning on the power of God. And the staff even became a symbol of the presence of God. And the staff was initially, it was just simply the shepherd's long walking stick, and it had a curly top on it. And that's why bishops still use it as a sign of their authority, that their power actually comes from God. Okay, so what Jesus says here is that peaceful souls are the staffs of God, someone that God leans on. It's not unbelievable. It's one thing for us to lean on God, it's quite another matter for him to lean on us. So as I was feeling oppressed, Louisa said, I was almost about to be surprised by the poisonous waves of disturbance. Now notice the little word almost. This wanted to come, but you're able to push it away in the divine will. My beloved Jesus, my faithful sentry, immediately ran to prevent disturbance from entering into me. Because you remember in volumes 1-4, no disturbance. Do you remember? You're not allowed any disturbance. And scolding me, he said, daughter, what are you doing? The love and the interest I have to maintain a soul at peace are such and so great that I am forced to make miracles in order to keep the soul at peace. Okay. I want to give you, there's lots of scriptures for this. Psalm 29:11. Psalm 34:14. Luke 1:79. And a very important one, John 14:27, my own peace I give you, not the world's peace. 1 Corinthians 7:15. Colossians 3:15. Now I could go on. Okay, I'm going to give you one more. Isaiah 9:6. Jesus is the Prince of Peace.
Isaiah 9:6.
Colossians 3:15. So what I'm saying is this whole message of peace is saturated in the scriptures. That the sign that God is really at work in a person's life, you look, you can actually see it in the person's eyes. You can see the peace that's there. You can look into a person's eyes who is involved in evil things or the occult or whatever. The eyes have it, as somebody says in the British Parliament. The eyes reveal it because the eyes are the windows of the soul. You can see a person's disturbance in their eyes. You can see their anxiety in their eyes. You can read all kinds of things in a person's eyes. Okay. Now, he said, okay, I'm forced to make miracles in order to keep the soul at peace. And those who disturb these souls and want to confront me and prevent this miracle of mine, which is all of love. So I recommend to you, be balanced in everything. So put a heading at the top of this message, balance. And he says, terribly important, because the church has taught us from the beginning, virtus in medio stat. I'm sure you've forgotten your Latin, have you? Virtue walks the middle road. V-I-R-T-U-S, virtus in medio, M-E-D-I-O, stat. Virtue stands in the middle, is the literal translation. And so Jesus says, be balanced in everything. My being is in full balance in everything. Okay. And yet, I do see and I do feel evil. Now, you see, if we get disturbed by what's going on, either in the church or in the world, we're not allowing him to keep that peace in us that allows him to use us to bring a solution, because you've allowed the world to get through. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. There's a very wonderful text I want to give you, Isaiah 26:3. Isaiah 26:3. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you. The very famous one from Isaiah. Isaiah 26:3. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you. And so Jesus says, my being is in full balance in everything, and yet I do see, I do feel evils, and I do suffer bitterness. Nevertheless, I never become unbalanced. My peace is perennial, my thoughts are peaceful, my words are honeyed with peace. The beating of my heart is never tumultuous, even in the midst of immense joys or interminable bitterness. The very operating of my hands in the act of scourging flows over the earth as enveloped in waves of peace. Do you see that we misinterpret God if we say the wrath of God is coming down on them, as if God was actually angry? He says he's in permanent, perfect peace. And whatever he sends, Psalm 145 verse 17 says God can only ever act out of love, because his very nature is love. So Jesus said, if you do not maintain yourself at peace, since I am in your heart, I feel dishonored, and my way and yours are no longer in accord. I would feel hindered in you. Now, he's not hindered in the world. He's not hindered, okay, but he can be hindered in us. From carrying out my ways. Psalm 25, verse 4. So I would feel hindered in you from carrying out my ways in you, and therefore you would render me unhappy. Only peaceful souls are my staffs, in other words, what he can lean on. And when the many iniquities snatch scourges from my hands, by leaning on these staffs, I always do less than I should do. Isn't that very important? Mm. So I want to give you Psalm 103, verse 7. He showed his ways to Moses. Jesus said, if may it never be, I lacked these staffs. In lacking my supports, I would send everything to ruin. It's absolutely amazing. Now we come to June the 29th. Okay. And I must say, you often find this problem with the translations, that a message can be omitted. Why? I don't know. So June the 29th, 1914, I have a VIP on this. How the soul who lives in the divine will takes part ad intra of the divine persons. You see, we've had this before and he's building on it now. As some authoritative people read what is written on March the 17th, that's the bit we've read about ad intra, ad extra, okay? Authoritative people, of course, are the priests and the bishops, okay? That one who does the will of God takes part in the actions ad intra of the divine persons. They said that it was not like that, and that the soul does not enter into this. In other words, that was unknown to the church before it was revealed here. Is that okay? I was left pensive, Louisa said, though calm, and convinced that Jesus would make the truth known. Then, finding myself in my usual state, I saw an interminable sea. Now, that sea stands for God's will, God's immensity, God's presence, God's love, anything to do with God. I saw an interminable sea before my mind, and many objects were inside of the sea. Some of them were small, some bigger. Some remained on the surface of the sea and were simply wet. I love that bit. Others went down to the bottom, becoming soaked with water inside and out. Others then went down so deep as to become dissolved inside of the sea. Now, what you've just read are stages of living in the divine will. That's why I put a VIP on it. Stages of living. And you might give yourself that as a heading. That's why I love the bit about some of them are on the surface and only getting wet. they're getting a lick. Okay, so let's come into this sea now in the second paragraph. My beloved daughter, did you see that? The sea symbolizes my immensity. It also symbolizes the divine will and the divine love and the divine presence and everything else. While the objects different inside are souls who live in my will. This is a wonderful, terribly important revelation. The different ways of being, some on the surface, some down, some dissolved with me, vary according to how they live in my volition. These are at different levels. Some in an imperfect way, some in a more perfect way, and others reaching the point of dissolving completely in my will. Now, he's going to talk about this more as we go on, the different levels. And you see, it depends on what level of relationship you have with God. Some people have a very intimate, personal relationship with God. Others have a more distant relationship with God. You know what I mean? It actually depends on the type of union you have, and also the level of commitment that we have to this. Now, my daughter, my ad intra about which I spoke to you is precisely this. Sometimes I keep you together with me, with my humanity. Now, what Jesus is doing here is he's answering the powers that be by giving them a reminder of what he's actually doing with Louisa under their noses. And they just can't believe it. Okay? Sometimes I keep you together with me, with my humanity, and you take part in my pains, in the works and in the joys of my humanity. But there are some other times drawing you inside of me, that's ad intra, I make you be dissolved within my divinity. And how many times have I not made you swim within me? Now do you see why the term swim is there? Keeping you so deep inside of me that you could see nothing but me inside and outside of yourself. So that's like if you asked a fish in the middle of the ocean, where's Ireland? The only thing they know is water. If you asked the fish, where is the Atlantic? They never heard of it. The only thing they know is water. Behind me, before me, above me, the breastplate of St. Patrick describes it. You know what I mean? Christ be behind me, before me, above me, below me, everything. That's the fish in the sea. But you couldn't ask the fish where the Atlantic was. They were born and reared in it. But their entire lives are in. Do you see why the Lord keeps saying to me, I've written all this stuff before. It's in the earth. It's in creation, it's in yourself, it's in your families, it's in everything. It's just a case of pulling it out. And just we wouldn't know how to come to these conclusions unless he tells us this. So there's your there, right on the side, fish in the sea. Doesn't know its address. It only knows water. Isn't it fascinating? he said, you were so deep inside of me that you could see nothing but me inside and outside of yourself. Now, as I kept you within me, you took part in the enjoyments, in the love and all the rest according to your little capacity. In the same way, the fish in the sea takes part in all the life that's in the sea and all that's going on in the sea. But it takes it all as perfectly normal because this is my home, this is where I live. And even though our works ad intra are eternal, the soul can still enjoy the effects of these works. Now notice the effects, because we can't produce them. Okay? They can enjoy the effects of these works in their lives according to their love. In the same way, the fish in the sea doesn't know where these wonderful hot vents are coming out of the depths of the sea, giving it warm water when it is actually sliding down towards the Antarctic. And these warm vents come up and heat the whole thing up. It doesn't know, it just enjoys it. It didn't produce it, it doesn't know how it happens, it just enjoys it. And when it goes on to the coral reefs, it doesn't know how the coral reefs were actually made or why this incredible variety is there, but it sure enjoys it. And so the soul here enjoys the effects of those works. It's absolutely fantastic. Okay. So, but we have to understand something he's already told us, that you will enjoy it according to the level that you're in. Like if there's a fish swimming on the surface of the water, it's not going to know the wonders of the depths. But the fish swimming in the depths may not know anything about surf riding either. It's an entirely different relationship with the sea. And so they all have different relationships with the environment they're in. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Jesus said, now, when the will of the soul is one with mind, you've reached the union, and I place her inside of me. Okay, so you must write a big union there so that you know where it's at. I place her inside of me and she renders herself indissoluble, always as long as she does not move from my will. The fish is all right if it stays in the sea. And Jesus says, you're okay if you stay in my will. All this is going to happen if you stay in my will. If the fish jumps out of the sea, that's it. What is the wonder if I said that she takes part in my works ad intra? Besides, from the way it's explained further down, if they wanted to know the truth, they could have known very well the meaning of my ad intra, because the truth is light to the mind. I think that's a very important statement. The truth is light to the mind. And so there will be things that we're reading that we don't get at all. Do you know what I mean? You don't get all the... But it's still giving light to your mind. You're actually still benefiting from it. And with light, things can be seen as they are. But if one does not want to know the truth, the mind is blind and things cannot be seen as they are. Let me give you an example of seeing things as they are. When St. Peter and the apostles were dragged before the Sanhedrin because they had healed a man, you know, in the Acts of the Apostles, the Sanhedrin were telling them, we told you not to preach in this name and blah, blah, blah. So when Peter was given a word in edgeways, I love the fact that St. Luke tells us that Peter waited until there was an infusion. Because his thing was to talk before he did anything else. Waited. And the enlightenment he got was absolutely incredible. And he said, excuse me, have you put us on trial for an act of kindness to a cripple. Brilliant. See, it cut through all the fluff. Because it was that miracle that made them arrest him. But it was because they were preaching Jesus. And he said, no, 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 you've put us on trial for an act of kindness to a cripple. Is that as far as we've got? The whole thing collapsed. You know. So that's what the light does. It allows you to cut through all the fluff and get to the essence. Okay. But if one doesn't want to know the truth, the mind becomes blind. Now that is John 9, 40 and 41. The story of John chapter 9 is a man who was born blind receives his light. Do you remember that? His sight. And then he has the spiritual journey into light as well. And at the end of it, in verses 40 and 41, the Pharisees, who are turning more and more and more from the light and from the truth, say, we're not blind, surely. And Jesus said, well, if you are blind, I could heal you. But since you say you see, I can do nothing for you. And so we're either on a journey into light or into darkness. It can't be one or the other. It has to be one or the other, sorry. And so the people who whose mind is blind, things can't be seen as they are. And so they raise doubts and they raise difficulties, remaining more blind than before. Besides, my being is always in act. That means what God is and does is there, present, no matter what century you're in. No matter whether you're at the beginning, the middle, or the end, it's always in act. There's no beginning, there's no end. I am old and new. I love that. Do you remember St. Augustine's thing, O beauty so ancient and so new, late have I loved thee. Okay. And I love the fact that in the Old Testament, God is called the Ancient of Days. I didn't write down the reference there. He's called the Ancient of Days. I am both old and new. Therefore, my works ad intra have always been. They are now and they will be. Just like the church says, Christ yesterday, today and forever. Okay. He was, he is and he will come. It's always an act. So through the intimate union of our will, the soul is already within us. The union makes this reality. And therefore, she admires, she contemplates, she loves, she enjoys. She takes part in our love, in our enjoyments, and in everything else. Why then was it inappropriate for me to say that one who does my will takes part in my actions ad intra? Now, the problem is that the authoritative people that were mentioned at the beginning of this message are not in the same relationship with God as Louisa. And they're not getting the same graces. And they don't have the same gifts and therefore, excuse me, they can't see as clearly. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So while Jesus was saying this, Louisa said, a simile came to my mind. A man marries a woman, the two have children, and they're so rich, virtuous and good as to make whomever they might live with them happy. Now, if someone touched by the goodness of this couple wants to live together with them, does he not come to partake in the riches of their happiness? Because if you join the family, you're joining everything, aren't you? And by living together with them, does he not feel himself being infused with their virtues? If this can be done humanly, why couldn't Jesus do it? It's a very, very simple image that she's using there. Now I'm going to stop there and give you a chance to talk about things.